It's like something right out of a science fiction novel. The Navy and Marine Corps invest millions of dollars in unmanned helicopters, jeeps, and boats. The scientists and technologists were in full geek mode as they discussed the next generation of vehicles and weapons at the recent Naval Future Force Science and Technology Expo. Federal News Radio's executive editor Jason Miller visited that expo and asked some of the experts behind these technology innovations to explain in their own voices.
Hi, I'm Sean McCann from MMIST, and we've made this autogyro cargo UAV, and we're very excited to be here at ONR Science Expo.
What does it do, and how's it being used?
It's actually an electric hybrid rotorcraft, and it benefits from stored energy and batteries to help it climb, so that helps keep the installed weight of the main propulsion system lower. But it's also unique because it lets us apply a bit of shaft power to the rotor system as we fly. So that means it's not exactly an autogyro, which normally is a freewheeling rotor. This is a partially powered rotor. And what we found is that we think we can extend both range and endurance by applying a small amount of shaft power, still keeping it an autogyro, but essentially it lets us fully optimize the performance of the rotor. And then on top of that, the mission or the application is something that's near and dear to our heart, and it's a cargo delivery system. So it's optimized in size and configuration to deliver directly to the point of use. So it'll fly by and it'll drop a 100-pound bundle to light infantry patrols on the ground. The U.S. Marine Corps is the main primary focus. And it's a way of delivering cargo without any burden to the ground forces.
And where is it in the R&D process? You obviously here at the ONR Science and Technology Expo have a prototype or something more than a prototype. Is it being used yet? Is it being tested?
This is actually an upgrade to an existing aircraft called the CQ-10 Alpha. And this is the Bravo, and we hope one day this will be the B model of that aircraft. And so while the A model has been used to deliver leaflets and cargo in Afghanistan and Iraq, this B model has not yet been used, so it's still in test. And we're very thankful to ONR, who's really pushing the envelope on this one with us.
The improvements from A to B is what, roughly?
The A model was a parafoil wing. So in converting an A model to a B model, we add a new wing kit, which is this rotor system that's electrically powered.
You're taking away the potential hazard of a person having to fly a helicopter or some kind of vehicle into potentially combat areas to drop resupply. Is that the main benefit, or is there more to it?
So, no, that's well said. So, in essence, it is to do jobs that are dangerous, but we're not just focusing on trying to do it in a way that protects pilots. We're looking at it from a cost perspective. So either dollar per ton kilometer, where we just look at the metric of what's the most efficient way to move cargo around. And then again, the performance factor from the user's perspective. So can it fly by and not identify them? And you know, there's a number of other attributes that we're looking for. So while a helicopter might go and they have to clear a landing zone, there's quite a lot of infrastructure. It can be done safely, but it's very, very expensive. And so we're trying to make it simple and effective.
My name is Amir Chuboki. I'm program manager for the Railgun program at BAE Systems. And we're displaying a launcher that we built for the Office of Naval Research. It's called Advanced Containment Launcher, ACL.
Talk a little bit about what does it do. What is a railgun that's got a lot of excitement during the conference? Tell me about what it is.
It uses electromagnetic pulse instead of the chemical energy to launch projectiles. So I think it meets, you know, some of the desires that you heard the Admiral had in terms of getting the propellant and explosives and the energetics out of the ship. So this gun does that. It doesn't need any propellant to launch. It uses electrical energy. And another thing that he mentioned about in terms of the magazine, so because you use the electrical energy, you don't need to have a space to store all the propellants in the magazine. And then most importantly, it satisfies Marine Corps' desire to have a very long range. This is a gun that it could do 100 miles. There's a 64 megajoule that it could do double that. So it's a weapon that it could provide that capability, and that's very exciting to have that.
Is it being used today? Where are you in the R&D phase?
We are in the SNT, Office of Naval Research, as program. There are programs starting in the R&D with NAVSEA. We have some key demonstrations to be made in fiscal year 16 and then followed by fiscal year 18-19 at Sea Demo. And if those are all successful and we get the support from the Navy, it will go into a program of record into a EMD phase.
Can you talk about why this new technology is important?
It's a breakthrough that it provides hypervelocity. You know, these are the basically 6-7 times speed of sound for the projectile velocity, and that could be used to be in different defense measures. For example, you heard the admiral talking about some of the ballistic missile defense or cruise missile defense. So if it can come out of the gun with a high velocity and ranges that is of interest, so then it becomes a very good defensive weapon against threats.
Daryl Davidson, I'm with the AUVSI Foundation, and we have grants from ONR to do educational and STEM-related outreach programs.
We're standing right next to a craft of sorts. What is it, and why you guys were part of the development of it?
Well, in layman terms, it's a catamaran, and it is a boat that was designed and built for a competition that we just held in October of 2014 in Singapore, where we had student teams, engineering and university students from five different countries around the Pacific Rim. Each country got to submit three teams of students. We would give them one of these boats and then let them turn it into a fully autonomous surface vehicle, a boat, that would have to navigate a course in Marina Bay in Singapore.
And the thought behind this is not just to give the students some STEM research and have some fun, but what's the long-term vision of putting an autonomous boat together?
We took this platform and we gave it to 15 teams of students. So you've got 15 little research programs going on where they got to tinker with it, decide what they wanted to put on it in terms of sensors, because there's a lot of movement now toward unmanned boats that can go out and reside and dwell in the ocean for days, weeks, months at a time. And so you've got 15 new programs of kids starting this. The other side of it is we wanted these kids to have some hands-on experience with understanding what ocean robotics was all about and to get exposed to it and hopefully excited enough to continue that area.
What are some potential uses for something like this?
The basic gist of this is that you can scale this platform up as much as you want to hold more sensors and things. It's not meant to carry people. It's meant to carry payloads, sensors, and data gathering devices that can be out in the ocean for long periods of time where people could not sustain. And it's to gather oceanographic data, weather data, monitor shipping lanes for piracy or things like that. Google has actually experimented with this, putting their tracker camera on this and starting to inspect and take pictures off the coastline of places like San Francisco Bay.
Is this being used in the military yet? Is this still in the research and development phase?
It's very much conceptual in the R&D side of it. Again, we're looking at the platform itself. We're looking at ways to use it, but you can monitor fisheries. You can do coastal surveillance. You can use it as a security device. You can also go out and gather data from parts of the ocean where you would never send manned vessels and have them sit out there for weeks at a time.
Hi, I'm Rod Peterson from Naval Surface Warfare Center in Carter Rock Division.
We're standing in front of an amphibious combat vehicle. Talk about what is it and how it works.
This is the ACV hydrodynamic test model. And so what we do is out at NSWC Carter Rock, Naval Surface Warfare Center Carter Rock, we have a long tow basin that we use to tow this to determine the ability for this platform to go in high speed and plane on craft. So at the ACV, if you will, is going through 1.1 and 1.2, which are essentially wheeled vehicles, if you will. The concept of ACV 2.0 is to get back to a concept of being able to go from ship to shore when the ship is on the order of horizon distance from the shore, come into the beach area, transform itself into a ground platform, and go inland. And so the whole idea is to use this hydrodynamic test model to determine the characteristics that we need and the geometry that best affords us to be able to go from ship to shore with low cost, low weight, low horsepower to accomplish the over the horizon mission.
So you use the interesting description, transformers. It goes from a vehicle that mainly stays in the water to one that can ride on the land. Is that something that the Navy, the Marines have used before, or is that a new concept, generally speaking?
It's generally a new concept. The idea is that this vehicle here is essentially a land vehicle. For us to achieve the high-speed attributes that we're looking for, it needs greater planing surface. And so that's why they have these flaps, these chine flaps that fold out from underneath. The track sucks itself up into the transom or into the sponson. The flaps fold out, give it more surface, wider surface. A bow plane goes out in the front, gives it more planing surface in the front. And then these high-speed water jets kick in to get it up and over a hump, which is a big challenge, and planes into the beach. Not a concept that currently is employed by USMC.
I'm Jeff Bradle from the Office of Naval Research and Code 30.
We're standing in front of what looks to be a Jeep, but it's a pimped-up Jeep, if you will. Tell me a little bit about what it is and how it works.
This is a currently fielded Marine Corps internally transportable vehicle, normally passively driven like a conventional vehicle, but we're making it autonomous. And so our approach here is different than most in that we're introducing low-cost vehicle-agnostic sensors that we can take this system and put it on a whole range of Marine Corps ground systems.
You tell me it's a self-driving Jeep.
Yes, eventually that is our goal.
Why a self-driving Jeep? What's the benefits of that?
There's multiple potential uses for a system like this. One is for a logistics resupply vehicle. One concept that the Marine Corps has is to conduct distributed operations and insert squads deep behind the lines, and they need some mechanism to provide some resupply capability. So instead of taking a squad member away from the team, an autonomous system that can go back to the depot and bring supplies for extended missions is of desire.
And where are we in the research phase?
Yeah, we're still in the science and technology development phase. We have a planned demonstration at the end of fiscal year 16 and the beginning of 17 to demonstrate the capability we have at this time. But our plan is to continue to evolve and mature the technology.
Is the end goal to do what? Do you have kind of a long-term vision?
There's no official requirements for this capability within the Marine Corps, but part of our responsibility in the science technology domain is to push that state of the art and show the Marine Corps what potential technologies can provide to them from an operational perspective. So we're going to develop this technology, conduct some user evaluations, some operational assessments, and see if the Marine Corps sees utility in this type of system in the future.
I'm Captain Brian Carpenter from Chief Naval Operations Staff, which is OPNAV, and the code is 841, which is the Science and Technology Office.
We're standing behind a U.S. Swarm demonstration boat. Talk a little bit about what is it.
Well, this was one of several boats. We had five of them that were equipped with the ability to operate independently, and that's a combination of technologies to be able to perceive the environment and then react to the environment. The environment would be obstacles to navigation, or other ships, or perhaps an enemy threat. And what we were testing out was the ability of these boats to do that in a coordinated manner, not only with other unmanned autonomous boats, but with remotely operated boats and then a command ship.
Is this another example of let's keep the seamen and sailors out of harm's way, but yet still be able to meet our mission in an effective manner?
Sure. Obviously, if you could take the sailors out of harm's way, that gives us a warfighting advantage, right? We could keep the sailors back aboard a heavily armed and heavily armored ship, maybe it's a cruiser, destroyer, or even the carrier, and we could send these boats forward to do reconnaissance, or we could have them interdict a threat, and the way that they would go about it would be not autonomously by a sense that they would be operating their weapons autonomously, but they would be autonomously out there without sailors aboard. But the weapons would be really controlled by the sailors back aboard the main vessel. That's an important distinction, that these aren't robot boats that are going to go out and attack somebody using just robot logic. They still have a man in the loop, if you will.
It's very similar to what we see with the unmanned aircraft, the drone predators. Is that the same concept?
They are. They have, a combination of autonomous aspects, probably getting to and from the operating area. They operate fairly autonomously. That's pretty benign operation. But then when they're in the area, then there's more man in the loop. And then the height of that would be during an engagement.
What's the status of the research?
Well, we just heard the CNO speak, and he's all about autonomy. So the long-term vision is to get more of this technology out into the fleet. It needs a lot of maturing, and then to get it to a point where we have the right mix of autonomy to reduce the threat to our sailors and autonomy to basically increase maybe some of our efficiency in these patrol operations.